Between 1995 and 2000, the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology conducted the first Wisconsin breeding bird atlas, and the folks found 235 different breeding bird species here in the state. The second survey was started last year, and it's going to continue until 2019. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we talk with two people who are very involved in the Atlas. They are Nick Anich, a conservation biologist with the Wisconsin DNR and the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas II coordinator. And great to have you with us, Nick. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
With us as well, Carl Schwartz. Carl is the steering committee chair of the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas II and also on the Bird City Wisconsin Steering Committee. And Carl, great to have you as well.
Great to be back here too, Larry. It's always a pleasure to chat with you and your listeners.
Well, it's great to have you again too. We'll be talking about the survey and how you can help as you listen into the show today. Maybe you can talk a little about some of the birds you've seen in your area. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or if you'd like, go to our Facebook page. The title of our page is The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a bird photo or a bird question or comment right there. Well, let's begin by talking about the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas, exactly what it is, and it takes a fair amount of time to conduct the survey, Nick.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically a bird atlas is a project that documents the bird species breeding across an entire region. And as you mentioned, 20 years ago we did the first one, and so now we are replicating that, and we'll be able to see, you know, how our bird species have changed, how the ranges have changed, how the abundances have changed. And so basically these atlases split the state up into some sort of a grid system, and so ours is based off of the USGS topo maps, and you end up carving those up, and you wind up with these atlas blocks that are about 3 miles by 3 miles. And about one-sixth of those, or 1,283 of those, are priority blocks that we want to get people into in the next 5 years and get them surveyed for the bird life that is there. Oh. So it is quite the project.
Somebody asked me, why not call it a survey, or why is it an atlas rather than a survey?
Atlas probably alludes to sort of the mapping effect, you know. The first atlas was published in a very nice book, and you can page through it, and you can see on every page the distribution of all the birds in the state. And so we're very excited to see how those maps are going to change with the new atlas.
Yeah, for sure. Carl, who uses that information from that, from the first atlas?
Well, that atlas has become sort of the Bible for bird conservation in Wisconsin. I think Nick, has the most direct experience, certainly biologists in the DNR, but people managing property and land wanting to know particularly where endangered species are, but also birders. I mean, it guides just the average birder in knowing where in the state to find key species. And I think the Atlas has been a beautiful book. I think the next publication will probably take multiple forms and be available electronically as well. We certainly have a great advantage this time in using the Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology's eBird system for collecting our data, and it's really made for a much more sophisticated process in doing it, and I think we'll make the data. Well, the data is already accessible. I mean,
sure.
Last time around, you had to wait 5 years to find out what you had found. We're already allowing people to make decisions and judgments based on what we're finding already.
Yeah. Well, as a steering committee chair, what does a steering committee chair do in this instance?
Well, I'm not really. I'm a member of the steering committee, not really the chair. I think Nick serves as both the director and the chair of our steering committee. My role on the steering committee has been to help guide our development efforts, the fundraising. The Atlas is an expensive project. It relies on obviously the commitment of some paid staff through the Department of Natural Resources, but it requires a lot of volunteer work, and I think we're very impressed and very lucky to be in a state where volunteerism and particularly citizen science has been so important. So my job is to help encourage volunteers and to raise the money to support some of the paid work that needs to get done during the Atlas.
Yeah.
I took the liberty already of posting to your Facebook page some details about how people can can get behind the Atlas and support the Atlas. We've raised almost $175,000 already by offering people an opportunity to be the sponsor of their favorite breeding bird in the state. And we still have about 70 species that haven't been sponsored. We invite people to go to our website and have a chance to do that and enlist their support, not only in helping with the breeding bird census work, but also with the financial backing for the Atlas.
No, that's wonderful. The volunteers, and, we're going to get to the phones here, and hang on, gang, if you're online already waiting to go on. We'll be getting to you in just a minute or two here, but I think I heard Nick say that there's more volunteers needed.
Yeah, for sure. So, we're pretty happy. I looked at the website this morning, and we had 1,085 people that had already submitted the checklist, but part of the challenge of this project is we have to cover the whole state. And so while, we've got pretty good coverage in the populated areas in the southeast, there's a big section, in the north central forest and in western Wisconsin where there aren't many birders and aren't many participants. And, with all these Atlas blocks, there's definitely an Atlas block near you. And the other thing I want to emphasize is, a lot of these priority blocks are being covered fairly well by experienced birders, but there's definitely an opportunity for backyard birders to be involved. We have tens of thousands of records come in from just people's backyards, people driving down the road and they see some baby turkeys, or they see a bald eagle on a nest, or you got a robin nesting on your house. I mean, all of that is fair game for the Atlas. You can contribute a data point and see it on a map. So We're definitely looking for anyone who thinks they might have an interest in this.
And is there any training or information available for people who's, like me? I think, I know some birds, but I'm not great at it. Is there help?
Yeah, our main website is off of the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology page, and that is wsobirds.org/atlas. And that has the handbook, the maps, all sorts of resources. Every county in the state has a county coordinator, so you can hook up with a local person and pester them, or you can pester me. But, this is a really fun project because we're getting questions every day from people, and I learn something every day about bird distribution or bird behavior that I didn't know, just because we got so many people out there looking around and learning and. That part of it is really fun.
And I think it's really cool to have this ongoing, to be able to see changes, new additions, unfortunate subtractions, perhaps. Are we seeing anything pop up in your mind, Carl, about anything new or different?
Oh, I think, Nick wrote last year, one of the first things that was apparent right away was things like the distribution of turkeys in the state. We already knew 20 years ago that turkeys were gaining a pretty good foothold in the state after being nearly gone after they were reintroduced. But now the Atlas has proved that if you think you see turkeys everywhere, well, you're correct. The Atlas has proved that there are turkeys just about everywhere. I atlased two broods in my front yard last week. two different sizes of turkeys with two different hens escorting them to clean up underneath my feeders. So, that's what we want. We want those records, I think you can invest maybe 10 minutes, Nick, would you say, looking at the WSOBirds.org website and figure out how you can get online and participate in it.
We've got some tutorials, and we've got a quick start page that should kind of outline how to get going pretty quick.
And those individual observations, you've got some house wrens in your backyard. You've got bluebirds nesting in a box in your yard. I've got some young cardinals that I could see show up at my feeder the other day, I went online quick to report that. So, everybody can take part in this thing, and that's really a good thing.
No. Well, we'll take some calls again. If you'd like to join in, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Do you need any other information, by the way, about the birds other than, okay, I've got four bluebirds in my yard? So,
well, the real basics that you need are location, date, the identification of the bird species, and then what the bird is doing, which we call a breeding code. So there's basically three categories of breeding codes, and this is all explained on the website and in eBird. But a possible breeding code is the lowest level, and that's like just a bird present in suitable habitat or a bird singing in suitable habitat in the summer. So in June and July especially, the majority of birds you see are probably hanging around where they're going to nest. Then there's a handful of probable codes, like a pair of birds or multiple singing males or a courtship display. So those are a little more evidence that the bird might be breeding near you. And then we have a bunch of confirmed codes, like carrying nest material or sitting on a nest, or if you see young. Those are all confirmed breeding. So basically, as long as you have date, location, bird species, and breeding code, those are the basics that we need. For people who are really working in one of these atlas blocks and they're going to go out and, go on a hike and come back with a big list of birds, we're also like the effort hours that you spent, the time and the miles that you spent, because recording that can really help us interpret these results. As you would imagine, the longer you spend out there, the more birds you're going to find. So we do want to be keeping track of that. But if it's just you looking at a robin in your yard, you can submit that without any effort information.
Well, let's take some calls. Connie in Portage, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Good morning. I have sort of a confusing thing. I have, I think, house wrens, and I have one nest at the back of the house and one in the front yard. And I've only seen a pair of wrens, but both houses are full of babies. And so I'm confused. Do they do that? I mean, one laying in each nest?
Well, these are the sort of mysteries that people ask us every day. one of the interesting things about house wrens is that the males will often build a whole bunch of nests, and then the females come and look at them. So for most bird species, if you see a bird carrying a stick and going off to build a nest, that's an atlas confirmation. But for wrens and also woodpeckers, if you see them building a nest, that is actually a probable breeding code, because you're not sure if they're actually going to nest or they're just building a bunch of nests. So it could be that this male built a number of nests in his territory, and it's possible you've got one male and two females, or, I mean, who knows? Things like this surprise us all the time, actually.
Well, I couldn't see. I only see two wrens. I think they're house wrens. They're like, in my bird book, they're like three different kinds of wrens, but I think they're house wrens.
That's likely.
Yeah. But both babies are healthy. I mean, they're real noisy, and they're feeding them. So something interesting.
I would assume there must be two females involved somehow to have two nests going. But, sometimes it isn't very obvious when birds are on a nest or feeding young, they can be harder to see. They kind of keep a low profile, you know, to try to not attract any attention to the young.
Yeah. Thanks, Connie, for calling. Appreciate it. Interesting story. Well, let's go to Mike in Castlebrook next. Hello, Mike.
Good morning. I've noticed a decline in insects and also barn swallows, tree swallows, and bank swallows. And I wondered if anybody else has noticed that also.
Yes. I mean, I think that the these birds that we call the insectivorous birds, the ones that eat insects, including the swallows and also the nighthawk and the whippoorwill and chimney swift, are all of concern because people are reporting declines. So I think you're not alone in that, and it will be very interesting to see what this atlas reveals.
Yeah.
And I think some of these species might be doing better than others. You know, tree swallows, people are providing a lot of nest boxes for, seem to be doing pretty well. But, you know, some of the other swallows, anecdotally, are becoming harder to find. So that'll be interesting to see what the final atlas says.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for that call, Mike. Yeah, go ahead, Carl.
I was going to add one thing there. Bill Miller, the director of the Western Great Lakes Bird and Bat Observatory, says that one sign of the problem here is what he calls the windshield test. You just think, as you drive down the highway these days, your windshield doesn't get nearly as buggy as it used to. And I think that's a good sign that that we have a problem here. It may make it easier to keep your windshield clean, but that means that there are fewer insects out there flying around, particularly at night and during the day. And that's, you know, whether that's a pesticide issue or what. I know the observatory and other, you know, other academics are trying to look at this issue and see what's causing this decline.
Interesting. Talking today with Nick Anich, a conservation biologist with the DNR and the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas II coordinator, and Carl Schwartz of the he's on the steering committee of the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas II, and he also is on the Bird City Wisconsin steering committee. Questions, join in, 800-642-1234. Give a call. I'm Larry Mueller. Malik Anderson, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock today on the Kathleen Dunn Show, the topic is long-haul trucking and the risks to drivers that makes them vulnerable to things like PTSD. That's at 1 right now. Taking a look at the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas II with Nick Anich and Carl Schwartz. And we'll turn next to Joan in Madison. Joan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. The woman who talked about the wrens, there's no way that two wrens will build a nest that close to one another. I call these wrens assassin birds. They're terrible birds. They're very territorial, and if you have a wren around your house, you'll have no other nests anywhere. I've had wrens who've destroyed cardinal nests, have got into a box where chickadees have been and tore it all up and threw the... I've even seen them kill birds in a nest. My daughter lives in the country and has bluebird boxes. She can't have them because the wrens destroy them. They are terrible territorial wrens.
Well, what do you think of that, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, people who have bluebird boxes know when the birds all get there early in the season, it's always kind of a competition to see, you know, are the wrens going to get there? Are the bluebirds going to get there? Are the tree swallows going to get there? Is a flying squirrel going to get there, you know? So this is part of nature, I guess, you know, like it or not. So the earlier caller, I guess it may depend how close together these two boxes are, whether they're in the same wren's territory or maybe they're far enough apart that he doesn't care.
Or maybe, and as you say, you were...
Or yeah, maybe it's one territory, one male territory with two females.
Yeah, that could be a possibility as well. Joan, thanks for... Carl, are there virtues to wrens?
Oh, yeah, I think the wren earns his keep with his song, if nothing else. I think I've got at least one pair in my neighborhood. I know I've got a box out, and there are wrens in it. And I do have other birds in my yard. I've got cardinals and orioles, a couple of woodpecker species, all nesting. I live on about an acre and a half, pretty woodsy. So part of the size of a bird's territory depends on the quality of its habitat. And if there are enough resources, birds can manage to get along and survive. My mother, when she was alive, didn't like visiting here sometimes because occasionally she'd see there were some feathers in my yard, and that would have meant that the Cooper's hawk, who also nests in the area, had found some pickings at my feeder, and that just upset her tremendously. But I try and tell her, birds compete, and usually to figure out how to balance their survival rates so that you can have birds of varying dispositions and qualities, and still everybody survives to some degree or another.
Richard in Duluth, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Richard. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I just wanted to explain how easy it is to use the Wisconsin Birding Atlas. I was birding over by the Brule River, a couple miles from Lake Superior, about 2 weeks ago, and I happened to find some red-headed woodpeckers, which for this far north is extremely rare. In fact, I was told no one had ever seen them this far north. And I had posted a photograph on the Wisconsin Birding Facebook page, and the folks from the Birding Atlas asked me if I couldn't enter the information. So they gave me a link, and I just want to explain how easy it was. I went to the link. There's a little search box, and I typed R-E-D, red, and then H, and up popped the red-headed woodpecker. I selected it, and then as far as breeding codes, there was another box that just had some drop-downs, and in my case, it was two red-headed woodpeckers present. And so I entered the information, and I assume this is the kind of stuff that your two guests want, because it's very rare to find something like this up here in the northwestern part of the state, and also there aren't as many birders.
Yeah. Nick, comment?
Yeah, well, I appreciate you entering that and for the testimonial, Richard. But the red-headed woodpecker is actually a species that's kind of been surprising me. There's kind of that corridor, like the Northwest Sands there in northwest Wisconsin and some associated open country that has actually been turning up a few more of these birds than I would have expected. I actually had a surprise pair of red-headed woodpeckers up here in Ashland, which was a new bird for the county for me, so I was kind of shocked to see that.
Oh, excellent. Richard, thank you very much, and I appreciate the explanation of how easy it is actually to record that information. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Dave in Walworth, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. Sorry, but going back to the wrens, we have a little birdhouse hanging by our front door. We've gotten a pair of wrens every year for several years. Typically, they've raised their young and left by very end of June, early July. That happened, and now we've got them back. And I don't know if they're just that they like the house to live in, or do they do multiple? Do they raise multiple families in a year? Or
yeah, Nick, a comment.
I don't know offhand about house wrens. In general, many birds will re-nest either if the first nest fails or something like that. But many birds do second broods. Like on my house, I have a robin back in the same nest trying. They successfully fledged the first brood, and now they're trying for a second round. So that may be what's happening.
Yeah, very interesting. Thanks, Dave, for calling. And Lori in Madison, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello, thank you for the show. Excellent as usual. I want to first of all second the observation regarding insectivores, especially with respect to swallows. I've watched a decrease in swallow populations actually just over the course of the last 6 to 7 years, dramatically both in species and in overall numbers in the area of Madison in which I live. And I think it reflects the breeding population, but and changes in building practices. I have a question about owls. I'm actually familiar with all the usual owl calls. This last spring, I began hearing a pair of owls making a call with which I was unfamiliar. It's just a single sort of shriek note, and the two birds seem to keep in contact with each other, sort of in the same way that with passerines you might have a young bird staying in touch with, or fledgling staying in touch with parents. In any event, these birds are still calling. I heard them as recently as the moon was waxing towards the recent full moon. And I don't know what they are. I have seen them once. Of course, they're out at night, so it's difficult to see them, but they are not horned. They are not large. I would have thought they might be barred owls or great horned owls, which are owls that I've heard in this area, but they don't appear to be. They were smaller, certainly, but I'm reluctant to call them saw-wet owls, and I am reluctant to call them short-eared owls. So I'd appreciate any
comments,
help you might have.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Well, Nick, maybe start with you.
Yeah, I mean, some of these night sounds are often the hardest to pin down. Owls have a classic song they make, but then they can have dozens of different noises that they make. You could try listening to calls online for either Eastern Screech Owl. That's a pretty small owl. There's another possibility, which is pretty rare in our state, but Barn Owl is another that's notorious for making different kind of screaming noises.
Hmm.
Well, I was hoping for a barn owl, of course. Again,
is this,
as I said,
open country or is this wooded?
It's mixed country.
Okay.
In Madison, it's towards one of towards the edge of one of the lakes. And
screech owl is probably the higher percentage.
These are not. I have, as I said, I've seen them. I am familiar with screech owls. I can identify screech owls on the wing. I've seen screech owl families raised from the nest on up.
So it's not a screech owl, Lori says. If not a screech owl, what would be the other option?
Well, barn is a possibility. The barn doesn't usually make a kind of screeching sound.
Right. Yeah, barn owls had the reputation for making, you know, amongst the strangest, most spooky calls. Those in long-eared owls. But you said, I think, that you saw no ear tufts or anything like that. So, but the barn owl, if you got a good look at it, I mean, that big facial disc would be, you know, would be pretty distinctive if you got a good look.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't get a good look. Anyway, thank you. I'll go back. I'll see if I can get a look, and I'll see if I can identify the facial disc. They should be lighter as they fly, and that I did not see. Of course, I'm seeing silhouettes.
Yeah.
You might also try taping the sound and sharing the sound with somebody that might have to be able to identify it better by sound.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks a lot, Lori. Appreciate the call. Mike in Madison has a question. Mike, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good afternoon. So last week, after I called into your show and asked about owls coming and attacking dogs, I went out and took the dog for a walk, and I'm pretty sure I saw it would look like a peregrine falcon. The thing is that it wasn't brown in color. It had more of a gray back, but it was much taller than a red-tail hawk, but it was thinner than our neighborhood grossly obese red-tail hawks. It was probably about 4 inches taller than the largest red-tail hawk in the area, but thin and almost a grayish color on its back, but its features looked exactly like a peregrine falcon, which I've seen many times up close through the Renaissance Fair and held peregrine, so I've got a good idea what the peregrine falcon looks like. But this was probably about 18 inches tall or so, and maybe with its wings down sitting on a tree branch, about 4 or 5 inches wide at its widest part. But once again, it was really tall, much taller than a red tail. And I'm wondering if you have some other options as what it could be.
Where was the bird? Was it perched in a tree or flying or what?
It was perched in a tree. It flew and landed in a tree, and that's what caught my eye. And I got probably within about 20 feet of it, and as I got the camera out to take a picture of it, some joggers came by and scared it away, so I couldn't get a picture of it. But I did get a really good, great look at it, because I was really amazed, because I've never seen a wild peregrine falcon on the east side of Madison before.
Yeah. So what do you think, Carl?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, you don't often see peregrines. I defer to Nick on this, but I don't recall seeing a peregrine perched in a tree. I mean, they tend to be, they like to take their prey in an aerial pursuit. I'm just trying to think, and I don't think of a peregrine as looking larger than a red tail. I don't think they are.
Yeah.
Nick, I'm a little stumped.
I would suggest checking out Cooper's hawk. They have kind of a grayish back and are pretty good size and prefer the forest or mixed habitats. I agree with Carl. I think the peregrine in a tree is not impossible, but unlikely.
Okay. So you're saying Cooper's?
Well, that's my guess anyway. Another possibility, I guess, is the male northern harrier is fairly gray, but those tend to be open grassland species and also unlikely to be hanging out in forested habitat.
Yeah, there we go. Well, good luck, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling. Maybe you can get a photo of it at another point and post it for us. That would be wonderful. We have Amy in Eagle, Wisconsin. Next, Amy, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's in your mind?
Well, we live on a small farm, horse farm in Eagle near the Kettle Moraine, and we saw a huge increase in swallows this year. We usually have several nests of barn swallows in our barn. This year we had 16. And last year, for the first time, a pair of cliff swallows built a house on top of a shutter on the second floor of the house. So we had one cliff swallow nest last year, and this year we had a colony of 6 cliff swallow nests. And
nice.
So we've really had an increase in swallows.
Well, you should put that up on eBird or post it for the survey.
I don't know why it is. I do know that house sparrows have been a problem with our barn swallows in the past, killing them and killing their babies and taking over their nests. And we haven't seen any house sparrows in our barn this summer. And I don't know where the cliff swallows came from.
What do you think, Nick?
That could be the answer. If your house sparrows have disappeared, that could have opened the door, I think, for the other ones to nest. A lot of these swallows are dependent on the nest site, and obviously barns like to nest in barns and cliffs like to nest under bridges or in other human habitation, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. Thanks, Amy, for calling. Appreciate it. And maybe Bill in Elm Grove here. We'll go to you. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. First of all, I want to thank you for being so polite to all the people that call in. You really do a nice job on your show.
Well, thank you.
But what I'd like to report is I live in Elm Grove, which is due west of downtown Milwaukee, just about 10 miles. And it's an established suburb with big trees. But I take a walk every morning about 5:30 or 6. And I know there's turkeys all over the state, and there are some that I've been seeing here for years. But the other morning I saw 15 chicks and one, whatever you call them, 15 at one time, and they were about the size of soccer balls. Or, but I counted them. I couldn't believe there was that many at one time. And then a couple days later, I went by, and I somehow scared them a little bit, and they could fly. Those chicks could fly. But I didn't think you'd ever see 15 in one.
It's amazing. It's amazing how early young turkeys can fly. I was surprised when they were a lot smaller than soccer balls, and they showed up in my yard. And my son let his dog out, not knowing they were there. And these little fluff ball things, flew right up and over the fence and all. I stumbled across a turkey nest once that had I think 18 eggs in it. So you could have a brood that size. That's certainly possible. That's interesting. The broods in my neighborhood aren't that big, but I suspect it's because of predators. I know I have coyotes that I see in my yard, and I suspect they dine on some of those young turkeys.
Yeah.
So, but if you have that many eggs, would the hatching be kind of spaced out or not? Would they be hatched pretty much the same at the same time?
I'd defer to Nick on that, but I think they all are sort of sequenced to hatch about the same time.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Appreciate your call. Well, let's go back to the Breeding Bird Atlas and this whole issue or question about volunteers. Go back through that again, will you, Nick, as to how people can get involved and what's required?
Yeah, so I guess there's sort of two ends of the spectrum. If you're somebody who knows most of your birds, we would like to try to talk you into taking in one of these blocks, which would involve about 20 hours of time over the course of the project. You know, we'd want you to get into all the habitats and do some repeated visits and try to identify the species that are there and upgrade them to these higher breeding codes. But if you're someone who, you know, you don't know your birds yet, but you're very interested, we will welcome your observations. You can submit them from anywhere. Our main website is wsobirds.org/atlas, and from there you can find out how to get started and get on your way.
Well, it's a real pleasure. And, of course, we have that up on our Facebook page so people can click right on it and go right to it. Nick and Carl, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
Our pleasure, Larry.
All right. Thanks a lot. Nick Anich, Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas II coordinator, conservation biologist in the Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation and the Bureau of Science Services for our Wisconsin DNR. Carl Schwartz, Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas Steering Committee member, and Bird City, Wisconsin Steering Committee. We didn't talk about Bird City. We'll have to do that again another time. But thanks, guys, very much for being with us today. You know, Wednesdays that's the day we zero in on outdoor things. Every week we try to cover something in the outdoors on a Wednesday. And another topic is outdoor safety. And coming up, a couple of folks from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources will be talking with us about just that. You stay with us.